Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 28th of July 2008, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear about nanotechnology that converts waste heat into electricity, a new lab-on-a-chip system that can be customized in minutes, and a new technology that will render the weekly car cleaning ritual a thing of the past. In this week's Azo Nano interview, we speak to Richard Shaw from Metamateria Partners, who tells us about some recently developed technologies. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. Researchers have invented a new material that will make cars even more efficient by converting heat wasted through engine exhaust into electricity. In the current issue of the journal Science, they describe a material with twice the efficiency of anything currently on the market. The same technology could work in power generators and heat pumps, said project leader Joseph Herrmanns, Ohio eminent scholar in nanotechnology at Ohio State University. Scientists call such materials thermoelectric materials, and they rate the material's efficiency based on how much heat they can convert into electricity at a given temperature. Previously, the most efficient material used commercially in thermoelectric power generators was an alloy called sodium-doped lead telluride, which had a rating of 0.71. The new material, thallium-doped lead telluride, has a rating of 1.5, more than twice that of the previous leader. But what's more important to Herrmanns is that the new material is most effective between 450 and 950 degrees Fahrenheit, a typical temperature range for power systems such as automobile engines. Once limited to the electronics industry, semiconductor material may hold the key to improving early detection of prostate cancer among African-American men. Quantum dots made from semiconductor material allows researchers to detect 6 biomarkers linked to prostate cancer. The small size of the quantum dots results in new optical properties that allow observers to determine the size and energy of the quantum dot and where it will emit light along the color spectrum. Smaller quantum dots are higher in energy and emit in the blue part of the spectrum, whereas the larger sized but lower energy quantum dots emit light in the red part of the spectrum. If you want to look at particular known proteins in the blood, such as prostate-specific antibodies, you can attach the specific antibody for that protein to the quantum dot and, using a laser, observe where the emission peak lies in the color spectrum. The height of the peak represents the amount of protein in the blood sample. A type of device called a lab-on-a-chip could bring a new generation of instant home tests for illnesses, food contaminants, and toxic gases. But today, these portable, efficient tools are often stuck in the lab themselves. University of Michigan engineers are seeking to change that with a 16-piece lab-on-a-chip kit that brings microfluidic devices to the scientific masses. The kit cuts the costs involved and the time it takes to make a microfluidic device from days to minutes. A lab-on-a-chip integrates multiple laboratory functions onto one chip, just millimeters or centimeters in size. It's usually made of nanoscale pumps, chambers, and channels etched into glass or metal. These microfluidic devices that operate with tiny drops of liquid allow researchers to conduct quick, efficient experiments. This new system offers 6x6mm blocks etched with different arrangements of grooves researchers can use to make a custom device by sticking them to a piece of glass. Block designs include inlets, straight channels, T's, Y's, pitchforks, crosses, 90-degree curves, chambers, connectors, zigzags, cell culture beds, and various valves. The blocks can be used more than once. Telomerase, an enzyme that prevents chromosomes from shortening when they divide, is widely suspected of playing a key role in making cancer cells immortal. Though researchers have developed a variety of methods for measuring the activity of this enzyme, none of these methods have proved suitable for use in diagnostic assays for cancer or in efforts to develop drugs that block telomerase activity. Now, a team of investigators at Northwestern University's Nanomaterials for Cancer Diagnostics and Therapeutics has developed a new type of nanoparticle-based assay that appears to be both accurate and sensitive enough for clinical use. The assay system consists of gold nanoparticles coated with short stretches of DNA that can serve as a substrate for telomerase. Using this assay, the investigators were able to reliably detect telomerase activity in as few as 10 to 1,000 tumor cells grown in culture. The researchers then showed that they could detect changes in the telomerase activity after the addition of a known inhibitor of the enzyme, suggesting that this assay could help in efforts to develop telomerase inhibitors as anti-cancer agents. The UK's Health Protection Agency has set up a new centre to study the possible health effects of human exposure to nanoparticles. The National Nanotoxicology Research Centre is being developed at the agency's Centre for Radiation, Chemical and Environmental Hazards at Chiltern in Oxfordshire. The agency is collaborating with universities and the Medical Research Council's Toxicology Unit to develop the centre and its research programme. The agency will be collaborating with the Universities of Birmingham, Cardiff, Edinburgh, Imperial College and King's College London and the MRC Toxicology Unit in Leicester. Knowledge of the possible interactions between nanomaterials and the body is developing rapidly. The NNRC will focus initially on the behaviour of nanomaterials that enter the body via the lungs and skin. The transportation of nanomaterials in the body will be studied and special emphasis will be placed on investigating the biokinetics of nanoparticles. This will involve studies of their entry into the body, their distribution within, and their removal from the body. Imagine if you never had to wash your car or clean your windows again. This may well become a reality if it becomes possible to produce the right coatings. Coatings that imitate the self-cleaning effect of the lotus blossom. In nature, the extremely water-repellent, super-hydrophobic surface of lotus leaves causes drops of water to form spheres, which roll off the leaf, sweeping away any dirt. Researchers at the National Institute for Interdisciplinary Science and Technology in India have made significant progress towards this goal by successfully producing a super-hydrophobic self-cleaning surface. Their success results from carbon nanotubes having a nanometer-thick paraffin coating with the help of a rigid aromatic molecule. Electron microscopic images show that the coating does not have a regular structure like the leaves of the lotus, but does have comparable nanoscale roughness. Water has as much trouble coating these artificial surfaces as the lotus leaf. A tilt angle of 2 degrees is sufficient to cause water droplets to roll off. Like the lotus, any dust is removed from the surface by the water droplets. Researchers at Case Western Reserve University have developed a technique that has the potential to deliver cancer-fighting drugs to diseased areas within hours, as opposed to the 2 days it currently takes for existing delivery systems. Using laboratory mice, drug delivery time from injection to the cancer cells was reduced from 2 days to mere hours. Using this as a model for potential human use, cancer patients may someday soon receive the benefits of cancer-fighting drugs within hours of injection. The system uses gold nanoparticle vectors to deliver photodynamic therapy drugs through the bloodstream to cancerous sites. Photodynamic therapy utilizes light-sensitive drugs that, when exposed to light of a certain wavelength, will energize and burn away cancer cells. Because exposure to light activates these drugs, photodynamic therapy patients must keep out of bright lights for days while the drugs make their way through the bloodstream to the cancer site. At that time, they're activated by a light focused on the specific area of the body. By shortening the waiting time from drug injection to activation, PDT patients are much less inconvenienced and tend to have a more normal lifestyle. Research scientists at Columbia University's Fu Foundation School of Engineering and Applied Science have achieved a breakthrough by proving that the carbon material graphene is the strongest material ever measured. Graphene holds great promise for the development of nanoscale devices and equipment. It consists of a single layer of graphite atoms arranged in a hexagonal lattice, similar to a honeycomb. Until now, graphene's estimated strength, elasticity, and breaking point were based on complex computer modeling theories. Laboratory tests have been stymied because of two major experimental challenges. the complexity in mechanically grasping graphene specimens to measure their elongation under force, and the difficulty of making specimens small enough to be free of imperfections. Researchers sidestepped the size issue by creating samples small enough to be defect-free. The research establishes graphene as the strongest material ever measured, some 200 times stronger than structural steel. According to the researchers, it would take an elephant, balanced on a pencil, to break through a sheet of graphene the thickness of saran wrap. In this week's Azonano interview, we speak to Richard Shaw from Metamateria Partners, who tells us about some recently developed technologies. The first is for water cleanup and uses a wet chemical process to grow nanomaterials on the pores of ceramics, which can then be tailored to suit a particular application or situation.
This is Cameron Chahi from Azom.com reporting from the MS&T trade show in Detroit, and I've got with me Richard Shaw, who's the president of Metamateria Partners, which is a subsidiary of Nanodynamics. Welcome, Richard. How are you going?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So, Richard, tell me, what do Metamateria Partners do?
Well, we're involved in the making and using of nanomaterials, especially applying them for different applications. We've got a couple of new developments. One is in the area of water cleanup material, where we basically have a porous ceramic that's filled with nanomaterials, and it's very reactive, and it takes things like arsenic and lead and other contaminants that you would find in water out much faster than conventional materials, and which basically lowers the cost not only of the product but also of the capital cost that you would have to support the product out in the field.
And so you were telling me before that the process that you use to deposit the materials is a wet chemical type process?
It's a wet chemical type process. We basically grow the nanomaterials onto the pores of this ceramic that we make, and it creates a forest of nanoparticles that the water has to come in contact as it flows through the media.
And you also tell me that using this process, you're able to tailor the coating materials for various applications?
Yes. Some materials break down better with some chemistry than others. For example, iron-type compounds will take out arsenic, but they may not be very good for taking out hydrogen sulfide. But on the other case, manganese dioxide is very good for that. So what we do, depending on what the contaminant is, we actually deposit those types of nanomaterials inside the pores of our ceramic.
And so what stage is this product at now?
It's out in the field for testing. We have several units that are being used both for hydrogen sulfide removal, removal of iron and arsenic, breaking down of phosphate compounds. These are the kinds of applications that we have.
What other applications do you see for this material? Things like third world countries where water purity is not very good, or maybe cleaning up of mining tailings dams and things like that?
That's right. Actually, there's quite a bit. Most metals you can remove by these processes. There are places in China, for example, where hydrogen sulfide in whole lakes, which represent all the water, it's a very odorous type of thing, and so this is a good opportunity. There are places in Bangladesh and northern India where some 30,000 people or more die a year just from arsenic poisoning. So these are the kinds of areas that we think this product, because it's a very cost-effective product, could go into.
Very good. Now you're also telling me about another product that you'd recently developed, nano cement.
Yes, this is the same chemistry as regular cement, except the particles are about 100 nanometers in size, which means they're very reactive, and we developed this about a year and a half ago. We've been working with several customers, and what we find is that when you substitute maybe up to 10% of this material for regular cement, you get increased strength. We've had increased strength up to 200% higher of concrete than regular, than when you just use regular cement. We also can adjust the setting time, cause cementing to set up faster, and so these are some of the advantages of using this. The process is fairly economical. We're in the process of looking at building a manufacturing facility now to scale it up to make several million pounds a month.
So whereabouts are you going to build the manufacturing facility?
It's actually going to be built in Nanodynamics up in Buffalo, Ohio, and Buffalo, New York, excuse me.
Very good. So just out of interest, on a more general note, have you had much opposition or much controversy over here to do with nanotechnology and the potential nanotoxicological effects of nanoparticles?
Well, I think it's a concern. The reality is that nanomaterials have been around for hundreds of years. We just don't really, we didn't know how to measure them at that time. I think a lot of the early studies are showing that there's not a lot of effect. But it's like any area, there's probably going to be certain chemistries and certain particle sizes where it's going to be a problem. I doubt if we'll find that nanomaterials by themselves are a problem. It's just going to be certain classes of nanomaterials.
So you think maybe through better education, that type of thing, people will realize that nanomaterials, there's benefits to them as...
We don't want to scare people, but, for example, we're doing work in batteries, applying nanomaterials for batteries, where the batteries charge faster. Now, if I put that in a battery, it's contained in a case, it's very unlikely that the nanomaterials are ever going to be in the environment. So here's a case where you could get a better performing battery, but you wouldn't have any exposure. So those will be good applications initially, too.
Good to hear. Yeah. Good to hear. I think you're echoing the sentiments of most people out there who know a little bit about nanotechnology and think that it's not necessarily, well, it's certainly not a bad thing, as long as we sort of create a better understanding, there's lots of benefits to be had.
I think that's true. Right.
Well, Richard, thanks very much for spending a few minutes with us, and we hope that the rest of the trade shows is a success for you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Azo Nano Business News. Deep Photonics Corporation, an innovative technology company manufacturing deep ultraviolet fiber laser solutions for the semiconductor, electronics and photovoltaic marketplace, today announced the introduction of the FLP266PPP, a 2-watt picosecond 266 nanometer fiber laser featuring adjustable pulse width, pulse burst packets and variable pulse packet frequency. Designed for the photovoltaic industry, this new model is a deep ultraviolet fiber laser, combining high power output with extended lifetime, output stability and reliability needed for demanding laser applications. For the first time ever, nanostructures have been measured on another planet. On July 9, the NASA Phoenix Mars probe recorded images with nanometer resolution, using its onboard Swiss-made atomic force microscope, and successfully transmitted these images back to Earth. The first images of the microscope, which was developed by the universities of Neuchâtel and Basel and by Swiss company NanoSurf, show the surface of a test grid with unprecedented detail. The successful imaging of the test grid serves as a calibration for the nanomicroscope and documents full functionality of the instrument, which is an absolute prerequisite for the scheduled microscopy measurements on Mars. Often referred to as the Oscars of Innovation, Oak Ridge National Laboratory and Asylum Research have just received the prestigious 2008 R&D 100 Award for the development of band excitation, a brand new scanning probe microscopy technology. Band excitation allows more rapid probing of energy dissipation at the nanoscale than previously possible, enabling scientists to characterize a sample's electrical, magnetic, and mechanical energy conversion and dissipation properties at standard imaging rates. EV Group, a leading supplier of wafer bonding and lithography equipment for the MEMS nanotechnology and semiconductor markets, today announced that Heptagon Micro Optics Proprietary Limited in Singapore, a wholly owned subsidiary of Finnish-Swiss wafer-scale micro optics manufacturer Heptagon, has purchased an advanced IQ aligner for UV-based nano-imprint lithography. Specifically, the IQ aligner will be used by Heptagon for high-volume UVNIL patterning of microlenses for CMOS imaging sensors. Set to cost-effectively enable the development of smaller next-generation camera modules for mobile phones, optical mice, and digital cameras, among other electronic devices, the IQ aligner has been in production since May 2008, specifically for Heptagon's high-volume 200mm glass wafer microlens production. MTI Micro Fuel Cells Incorporated, the developer of Mobion off-the-grid portable power solutions and a subsidiary of Mechanical Technology Incorporated, announced that it's achieved 2,700 hours of continuous operation with a Mobion laboratory cell, the building block of the company's Mobion chip and systems. In comparison, a typical cell phone plan in the US, marketed to moderate to heavy users, includes 3,000 minutes per month, which over the life of a typical 2-year contract translates to only 1,200 hours of use. At Semicon West 2008, SUS Microtech unveils the second generation of its MA300 production mask aligner, featuring a dedicated alignment kit for creating 3D interconnects for applications like chip stacking and 3D image sensor packaging. High alignment accuracy is required to enable 3D applications ranging from latest generation mobile consumer electronics to supercomputers. The new 3D alignment platform enables bottom side and infrared alignment for 300mm based three-dimensional packaging lithography applications, thereby enabling cost-effective mask aligner systems to meet the most aggressive technology roadmaps for thick resist applications and keep costs low relative to the one-time stepper lithography solutions. Carl Zeiss SMT yesterday was presented with a 2008 Editor's Choice Best Product Award from Semiconductor International magazine in recognition of the revolutionary breakthrough performance of its Orion helium ion microscope. The Best Product Awards are presented annually to acknowledge those products that deliver the level of excellence needed to succeed in today's and tomorrow's semiconductor industry. That was Azone Nano News for the week commencing the 28th of July 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening.